Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to your big La Liga preview here on Ranks FC. The Spanish season is upon us. It starts this weekend, and it feels like just yesterday that the World Cup final was here. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me for this first part of the episode is the one and only Mr. Dean Jones, our transfer guru. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, very good. I mean, I guess transfers has been pretty relatable to the episode that we're doing today, particularly given what Real Madrid have already done and what Barcelona are trying to do. So it's, there's been plenty to talk about in the pre-season coming into this one. But this also feels like a slightly different version of La Liga, I think, as we head into this season preview, don't you think?
I think it could be very interesting. And it's interesting what you say about transfers, because at the top of the pile, you know, Real Madrid have obviously splashed extensively. We're expecting Barcelona to splash even more. They've spent money. And then you've sort of tootled down the division after the big three, if you include Atleti in that, who have spent, but not to the same extent. And like, there have not been that many transfers elsewhere. And this is something that we'll talk about in parts two and part three of the episode. We're going to be joined by the brilliant Rory Barlow, Spanish football expert and all round brilliant dude. We'll talk about all of the rest of the pack where there hasn't been all that much movement. But at the top of the pile with Real Madrid and Barcelona in particular, it feels like both of them have kind of come out all guns blazing into this transfer market and reestablished themselves as real kind of market leaders in terms of the way that football works.
Yeah, we'll wait to see about what that means. I don't know what that actually means in real terms, but there's been a bit of a precedent set by Barcelona and a bit of a challenge response, I'd say, from Real Madrid across the course of this summer. Whether it's the right approach remains to be seen, and that's what we'll kind of get into right now. But at least they're trying something, because over the last 2 years, they've fallen away, and their habitual tendencies, which have been in their DNA, haven't been very recognizable. So I think that is probably something they've looked to fix with their transfer business so far in Madrid.
Yeah, I mean, look, we'll come on to Real Madrid and what they've done, and also the change in the dugout, etc., because they're all huge storylines. But I think that as Barcelona are champions, it feels only right to stay with them and to start with them as they look to defend that crown under Hansi Flick, who has been, you know, an absolute godsend to Barcelona in so many ways. There were question marks about Hansi Flick when he took this job. There are pretty much no question marks anymore after two seasons of real success and an extent dominance, I would suggest, at the top of La Liga. So Barcelona have had themselves a relatively busy summer thus far. Anthony Gordon came in right at the start of the window for around £70 million, so around €80 million, $85 million. They've also brought in Karim Adeyemi for around €25 million. They've also brought in Jesse Pasiwu from Club Brugge, who's 18 years old. We're not expecting to see loads of over the course of this season. And Hamza Abdelkarim, who we saw a little bit of at the World Cup for Egypt. He spent a bit of time with Barcelona's B team last season. Again, one for the future as much as anything else. But it does feel like Barcelona perhaps have been more interesting thus far in terms of the players they've managed to get off the books to a degree, Dean, because we know that Robert Lewandowski left. He joined Chicago Fire on a free, but also it was a question about bringing some of these wage bills down. Marc-Andre ter Stegen has headed off to Ajax. Ronald Araujo in the last week has joined Liverpool. Ansu Fati has gone to Monaco after being there on loan last year. Iñaki Peña is off the books as well. I think that what's done very, very well here by Deco is that he's looked at it and thought, right, we need to reduce this wage bill. Marcus Rashford's wages were obviously quite extensive last season as well. They have fundamentally brought that down, and that was a big question mark about where Barcelona could invest and how they were going to be able to bring players in.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously they are not finished in this transfer window yet. And their attempts to sign Julian Alvarez show a significant statement in the market. Same with Rodri. Even if they don't sign Alvarez, which is looking to be the case, they do intend to sign somebody of significance for that front line. So yeah, maybe they've had to open up space for that. I'm still somewhat surprised that given how well Rashford did, that he didn't end up signing in some capacity. I don't know, maybe there's still a small possibility that that comes to fruition right at the deadline. It doesn't seem to be at the moment, but you know, he had 28 goals and assists for them, and that's pretty good from his perspective. He pretty much did as well as he could to earn himself a contract, but it wasn't enough, and they've obviously gone with Anthony Gordon and now going to look to strengthen in other ways. I guess the biggest strength for Barcelona right now, though, isn't that they haven't needed significant change. You know, they, as I said at the start, they set the bar, and now it's about Madrid's response, but also Madrid continuing to progress, but in a way that's natural, I guess, because that's what they need right now. They already know that they have the style of play and the characters that can win them another La Liga. Like, they are the favourites to go and win it again this season. Their playing style is superb. Their dominance in the league last season was undeniable, and half the teams just won the World Cup. Like, they are in a very good place. And even decisions like getting rid of Lewandowski seem to be right. I mean, I haven't watched every minute of him at Chicago Fire, but like, he hasn't been great. Like, he's missed some big chances so far, and that's fine at Chicago Fire, but that ain't all right at Barcelona anymore. Like, so yeah, they've made some...
I don't know if it is okay at Fire. The people I've spoken to don't seem that happy about it.
No, because they had a better forward in the first place before he came. That was the problem he's got. But nevertheless, you know, maybe it's a vanity project, something like that. Maybe it's Chicago trying to get a
sell shirts. Sell shirts is what I would say.
Which is a shame, because they were actually doing well. But it is Robert Lewandowski, and he should be able to score plenty of goals in MLS, because he was doing a reasonable job in La Liga. But yeah, ultimately, I think that Barcelona are, they are obviously the team to beat. But it felt like they were able to coast their way to the title last season. Madrid, while they did challenge for a little while, it was never...
Sustained,
and it didn't really feel authentic, if I'm totally honest. And that's why this season should be more interesting, because of the approach that Madrid have taken to now try to stop Barcelona. Because it's not just actually the title that's up for grabs here. It's the actual direct competition between these two teams. Like, Barcelona, even on a game-by-game basis against Madrid, are a better team.
I think that's fair, you know, and also we don't know what the kind of outlook is going to be. We'll get to Real Madrid in a minute. And I think the reason that it's pretty fair to say that is because you look across it in pretty much every position, there are some slight holes, I would suggest, in this squad. I still have a couple of question marks about that left back, left centre back area and how Barcelona go about their business there. But, you know, aside from that, you look at this team and think this is very, very well stocked. And look, if Rodri comes in, you know, as we're talking about, whether that happens or not is still up in the air at the moment. But you're looking at it and thinking, okay, that would add, you know, probably the best midfielder in the world to a team which is probably already the best midfield in the world, maybe PSG, but, you know, are in that conversation alongside them. You're adding him to a midfield which has just gone and won the World Cup, effectively, in terms of how they've built that out. And you're then looking at it and thinking, well, where are the question marks? I think that the only two question marks Barcelona fans will have is that left back, left centre back area, and maybe an outright number nine. And this, I suppose, is where the question gets to. We're not doing a Champions League preview here, but there's always going to be an element of thinking about both competitions when you're addressing both Barcelona and Real Madrid in this regard. And whilst, you know, three La Ligas back to back to back would be an incredible achievement, I think also there will be players in this squad, Lamine Yamal, for example, who has now effectively won the set, you know, bar the Champions League at the ripe old age of 19. You're kind of wondering it, you know, how it all affects him and what the goals are for many of this team who have kind of gone and done it domestically. Can they go and do it in Europe as well? So they're the only questions, I think, remaining for this squad. Who is going to play in the nine? Is that going to be Anthony Gordon? Is that going to be Karim Adeyemi? What's it going to look like in that regard? And how does that all shake out when this comes to pass?
They're going to sign someone. Like, I'm absolutely convinced they're going to sign someone. Like, I just don't see a situation whereby they don't, given they clearly have had this focus on Alvarez. So you don't do that and let Rashford go and Lewandowski go and not bring in another player that is so naturally suited to it, because Gordon and Adeyemi aren't naturally suited to it. They can do it.
If Ferran is going to go to PSG, true, which looks increasingly likely.
Yeah, which he is, you know, like all the information today is that deal will get done at over 50 million euros and that Ferran will leave. So if they're allowing all of this to happen, it just has to lead to Barcelona signing, even if it's not a traditional nine, which may not be, certainly a player that's going to be taking up the area of the field. So I would kind of put that worry to the back of your mind at the moment as a Barca fan, because I do think it will be sorted before the deadline. I think you'd be okay. Defensively, I guess, is the slight flaw, as you mentioned, maybe at fullback, maybe the fact that they play this high line that can look vulnerable at times. But, you know, who had the most clean sheets in La Liga last season? Barcelona. So this is not only a team that averages the most goals a game, that averages the highest amount of possession a game, that is the dominant force winning the league title. They also don't actually let in many goals, 15 clean sheets last season. Like, so we can look at the defence as a potential frailty, but it wasn't really. It wasn't really. And so we'll have to see whether Madrid have done enough to make it seem like they can force that to become a weakness, I guess.
I think what's interesting is some of the links. Obviously, João Cancelo linked with a return. Negotiations continue there.
He clearly wants it.
I think that will probably happen, if I'm being honest. Then there's the question of, you know, a centre-back. They're in negotiations with Real Betis for Nathan, who's been good, but, you know, not absolutely brilliant, but I think would be absolutely fine as a rotation piece within this Barcelona team. And if they can't get those, you know, top targets at a price that they want, you know, we've spoken about someone like a Christian Romero before. We've spoken about Mickey van der Ven. I don't think van der Ven is going to be leaving Tottenham at this point. Laporte doesn't look like he's going to be leaving Athletic Club. When you kind of put it in the context, if they were to go and sign, you know, let's say João Cancelo comes in, they sign a centre-back, say it's Nathan for now, Rodri comes in, and then, you know, whoever that striker is. There's talk of Lautaro Martinez that's kind of re-emerged today, which I think is interesting given the fact that the Julian Alvarez saga drags onwards and onwards. And, you know, you mentioned it on Patreon before, but is Victor Osimhen still kind of lurking there in the background? And I'm not quite willing to rule it out yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out until it's not possible, to be honest, or at least until Barcelona have solved this problem, because while it hasn't really been talked about, it does seem like an obvious fix if they can find a workaround for the financials on his personal side. And, you know, we've seen that Barca typically are very good at reconstructing the market to suit them. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they could make something like that happen. But it's just a team that is just like so confident in who they are. And I think that's probably the biggest concern for everybody trying to chase them this season, is the obvious identity of Barcelona. And look, I think that their rivals will be pleased when they see a Ferran Torres leaving, because he gets it. he knows how the team functioned. He just scored the winner at the World Cup final, which by all accounts, people say that's part of the reason he's being annoying at the moment, because he's using that as kind of a selling point as to why he should be one of the most important players in the game. Fair play to him, right? But, you know, at the status level he was at, I don't think it was a bad fit to continue. And I think the likes of Real Madrid will be pleased to see it move on, that someone else has to find a way to fit in with who Barcelona are. Can they join the pieces together? Can they bring the team together in the way that it needs to happen? We know how they build out from the back. We know those midfield combinations and the way that they connect the pieces. But yeah, who is going to be that central figure that ends up doing it all?
I'm intrigued to see if they do use Anthony Gordon through the middle, but I think if they do, it'll probably be more on Champions League nights than anything else. That's where I can see it potentially playing away. I'm not 100% sure that that's going to necessarily need to be the case when they're playing in La Liga, but I think you're right. Like, they are comfortable favourites in terms of how comfortable they are with themselves. They are so comfortable in their own skin. There's so much of this team that meshes together. There's so much of this team that has just won the World Cup, as you say, and it's going to be a job to overhaul them. And that's the job that falls to Jose Mourinho in his second spell at Real Madrid. They have not been quiet in the transfer market, it is fair to say. Yann Diamande arriving for a club record fee. It's around £116 million, €140 odd million. They've also spent £50 odd million on Marc Cucurella. Carlos Espi came in as a backup forward option from Levante for around £20 million. Denzel Dumfries came in from Inter for around £17 million. And then they brought in Ibrahima Konate and Bernardo Silva, both on free transfers. That is not bad going, is what I would say.
It's not bad going, no, but we don't know yet how quickly they gel. We don't know what version of Mourinho we're getting. And given those comments, which seem to be a slight towards Bernardo Silva the other day, there might be reason to be concerned about his man management already. I don't know the exact manner in which he meant those comments towards Bernardo about the way he likes to act when he's on holiday and all the rest of it. Look up the quotes if you want. But yeah, and there's obviously this Rodri conversation which muddles it all, because Rodri was supposed to be the guy in the middle for Madrid that comes in, ties the pieces together, adds intelligence and control. And that's not going to happen, because if he's going anywhere now, it's Barcelona. And I do think that's a problem. I also, from the Mourinho standpoint, like, I think Madrid needed someone with passion and character and identity to give them that, you know, no one likes us, we don't care sort of thing. Because they obviously thrive on it. But I'm just not sure if he's going to be too emotional at this stage of his career. Like, he seems a bit weary these days in the sense that he doesn't like being undermined, disrespected, doubted, any of these things. Yet the clubs and the jobs that he's been at recently, they're not at the same profile level as this one.
Very few are, to be fair.
Yeah. But obviously, like, they say never go back, and he feels he's still capable of being back there. And maybe he is, but I don't know. I'm concerned about it. I actually, one of my hottest takes that I've been thinking about is I think they should have let Vinny go. I think that letting Vinicius go would actually have given, if they're fully in on Mourinho, I think letting Vinny go might have allowed him to redress the balance of Real Madrid and also build it better towards what he is at this stage of his career. Don't get me wrong. Like, Vinny, Diamande and Mbappe is the most explosive front three you could have available, especially with Bellingham then finding the pockets in between them, right? But what are we going to see from Madrid going backwards? And are we going to hear quickly Mourinho talking about the fact that they're caught out because Vinny hasn't tracked back? Like, Diamande, don't get me wrong, Diamande I think will work back for what it's worth. But like, I don't know, is Bellingham having to track across and do the hard yards that Vinny doesn't really like doing? And are you going to lose something of Bellingham? I think Bellingham could have a fantastic season here, but it depends what his role is in this midfield and whether he does have that sense of freedom or if he is having to concern himself with covering runs. So that will be something that I'm intrigued by as the season opens up. Obviously, as I say, that Rodri position is a problem. And yeah, look, Cucurella's good. Dumfries is good. Kanate is good. Bernardo Silva's good. I just don't know, mate, if it's closed the gap enough or if it closes the gap quickly enough to stop Barcelona building up a level of momentum so that by the time we get to October, you want these clubs to be neck and neck by the time they meet, right? And Barcelona, Real Madrid, I just get the feeling that Barca are going to start this season so well that Real Madrid have to gel so quickly. And there's so many aspects of it that needs to happen in that. Concern's the wrong word because they should get a good start. Like there's no excuses here. Like their first few games and they go and play Espanyol and Real Sociedad and Malaga. Like, okay, these are the types of games Mourinho's going to be expected to win. But as soon as he doesn't win one, like I do think the criticism is going to be pretty harsh.
I do think it's interesting that, you know, that the first home game is against La Real, who will come to town believing that, you know, they're capable of bloodying noses this season. Obviously, we'll talk about them a little bit more later in the show. Then they have to visit Betis four games in, which has been, you know, traditionally quite a difficult spot for Real Madrid to go to. Now, it's not the Villamarín, so it's slightly different. But, you know, then they've got the Rayo game. Rayo going to come to town, you know, with a chip on their shoulder, as they always do. Then they're away to Atleti in, like, game seven. There's a lot of kind of difficult games here before they play Barcelona, which I think is the 10th game of the season. I'm quite intrigued by, you know, how it's going. Now, look, I think one thing that's interesting is if you do deploy that front four of Vinny, Mbappe, Diamande and Bellingham behind them, you're going to have too much for most teams, right? It's going to be those games with teams who are a little bit cleverer, a little bit cuter, that are going to be interesting to see how Real Madrid deal with those situations and how Mourinho deals with those situations. Now, bear in mind, you know, he was Benfica manager last year and yes, they came third in the league. They didn't lose a game, but they drew way too many. And I think that was kind of pointed out as one of those things about, oh, Mourinho, is there still that level of we don't concede first and foremost and then we score when we can? Because if they can get a defensive line that works and gels, you know, good luck keeping this Real Madrid side out for 90 minutes, I think, in terms of the talent that's available to them. Whether the balance is there or not is always going to be the question, but there should be enough to make things happen. The question is going to be, can they keep those clean sheets at the other end? Is there going to be enough control in the midfield? And look, I actually thought that Mourinho's comments about Bernardo were a little bit overblown. Obviously, they're countrymen. They know each other well. And he basically was like, look, he likes having a couple of weeks where he doesn't do anything on holiday. And so he's come back and he's a little bit kind of, his fitness is low. Like, yeah, fair enough. It's kind of fine. He also said he's an incredible player. So I'm not particularly worried about his man management skills in that situation in particular.
It's what they get blown into though, isn't it? And how Mourinho then reacts about it when he's asked.
That's
what happens. Or when the players asked and they haven't perhaps heard what Mourinho said about them. It's been an ongoing problem that we've seen in the latter stages of Mourinho's career since you really could say he was special. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, obviously this weekend we don't get to see Barcelona and Real Madrid. You know, La Liga starts, but those two aren't in action yet in the league. But yeah, once we get to next week and those teams are fully formed, I expect that we will have a better idea because I think the Rodri situation is going to be addressed in the coming days. I think that Barcelona's new bid is pending. I spoke to someone yesterday who seemed to think Barcelona and Rodri are confident that they're going to get what they want and that while Man City were fairly annoyed at the level of their opening bid, and I think they probably felt that Rodri might have kind of taken this pathway without them, Man City fully knowing what was going on. I think as long as this situation is treated respectfully, they can get a deal done that actually suits them financially. Like, if they don't quite meet the 80 million, then I think maybe they can come out in the wash at 70 million and City are okay with it. We'll see. But that's what could change between us talking right now and Real Madrid and Barca actually beginning their seasons.
Just one thing, I suppose, on this before we move on to Atleti is, if, you know, Real Madrid look like they've now missed out on Rodri, whether he goes to Barcelona or not, kind of by the by, I don't think he's going to turn around and then go and rejoin Real Madrid, even if that one falls through. Are they looking to bring in, you know, another central midfielder? There's been discussion of Martin Zubimendi in recent days. I've seen Adam Wharton linked. There's always the kind of perennial, oh, will they go back in for Enzo Fernandez, etc. Alex Garcia, I saw linked from Bayer Leverkusen, who I think is a wonderful player, but not what they want or what they need right now. Locatelli was linked in the Italian press. Is there a sense that Real Madrid will go back in for another midfielder?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a chance. I think that Wharton would be, in my eyes, like the most fascinating one. Like, as an Englishman, like, I'd love to see Adam Wharton go into that midfield, and I think that he would be great in that league. But so far, there's been no noise made towards Crystal Palace from Real Madrid or anybody else about a transfer in this window, which is somewhat surprising to me, given the other types of players in his position that have moved this summer. But Palace have still got some hope of holding on to him. The Enzo thing, the noise is quietened down. It seems, if anywhere, he would end up going to Man City. But, you know, given we know that they were half expecting Rodri to land this summer, you would imagine that Mourinho's still going to look to get someone through the door.
Okay, well, we will see how it all shakes out, which leads us to the third part of this little triumvirate, and an Atleti side who actually finished fourth last season rather than third. There's going to be an expectation that they are going to bounce back. A couple of interesting transfers from their perspective as well. Kangin Lee coming in and taking Antoine Griezmann's number 7 shirt is a transfer I really, really like. They've brought in a little bit more in midfield. Morten Hjulmand arriving from Sporting, £34 million, around 40 million euros. Alejandro Grimaldo returns to Spain, a 20 million deal to bring him in from Bayer Leverkusen, which gives them some real attacking force down that left-hand side from left-back. And they brought in a couple of others as well who are more likely to play, I'd say, kind of reserve team roles than anything else. You know, Edgar Alcaniz from Levante and Astralegaga from Barcelona as the goalkeeping kind of third choice option, you would imagine. They've obviously lost a couple. We spoke about Griezmann there. Longley decided his time was up with them as well. And the big one, perhaps, Thiago Almada returning to Argentina with River Plate for 17 odd million pounds, which feels right, considering it just didn't really work out ever for Almada. And it should potentially open that spot up for Alex Baena, who was very, very good at the World Cup with a left back going around him who wanted to get wide. I think Grimaldo will offer Atleti something similar, and it gives them an option in those areas. Obviously, they brought in Ademola Lookman in January. There's a squad here that will be expected to, at the very least, return to being kind of third in this league, but also potentially to bloody a few noses. And Diego Simeone, you know, obviously on a massive contract, there's new, not ownership is probably the wrong word, but there's new people involved at the top at Atleti, which will be looking at that contract and saying, is this worth it for what we've been getting in the last couple of seasons? We've spent a lot of money. There's not been a hell of a return in terms of silverware or to be honest, particular improvement or trajectory. I think this is a big, big year for Atleti and for Diego Simeone, Dean.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and we've seen ongoing transfer talks as well about Cristian Romero and whether they can get him in there. I think he's clearly had quite an appetite for that move. And obviously that fits in with the whole Simeone culture and nature of their play. Obviously a surprise season for them last term to not finish in the top three, because the reason we always talk at the start of a season preview about these three teams is that they are expected to be in those top three positions. It's just, what is the ranking order? And that's our job to try to figure out at the moment. I think if we were to do a ranks ranking, then it was going to be Barca, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. But Atletico Madrid are always the kind of team that have the potential to pose a threat to the very best. Whether they've come far enough, I'm not sure, but I always love the analysis around them in the early stages of a season to just try to understand how close they're going to be to not really winning the title, but at least making a go of it and ultimately probably finishing second.
It's really interesting because like there's so little you can glean from what Atleti have done thus far. You know, they played games against Manchester City and Manchester United in recent preseason friendlies, and kind of looking at the squads that they played in those games and thinking, what on earth is going on here? Like, how am I supposed to glean anything from this? That in the last game, they played four central midfielders with Ademola Lookman as a number nine. There's a couple of youngsters in that squad as well, Dominguez, Martinez. And you're thinking, I don't really know what I'm supposed to learn from those games. And I think that that's interesting because it feels like Atleti are not settled coming into this season. And look, there are good bits and bad bits about that. I don't think they've quite worked it out. And look, there's certain players obviously still coming back from the World Cup. They don't start their La Liga campaign until the Wednesday afterwards, well, after this weekend. So pretty much a week's time when we get to see them in action against newly promoted Malaga in their first game. And you're kind of looking at it thinking, I'm not quite sure exactly what this looks like yet. We've barely seen Julian Alvarez in any preseason games. Now, you can read into that what you will, if I'm honest, but you're kind of looking at it and thinking, okay, cool, the internationals are starting to come back now, but we're, what, a week out from their opener, and I have absolutely no idea how Atleti are going to line up. No. Like, that is quite scary in some ways, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Look, they're not going to be the only team that are in this kind of situation. No. You know, we've had a six-week World Cup. The very best teams have had players go all the way to the wire in that competition. You know, even, you know, see PSG this week returning for UEFA Super Cup, and they've only just got like four or five of their best players through the door on like Monday. So like there's lots of planning and preparation to still go on. But interesting, Atleti do play this weekend, don't they? Like, so while I mentioned that Real Madrid and Barcelona,
they play on Wednesday. So it's like a, yeah, it's played
but it's
out,
in like the really first, right. Yeah, not the weekend, but it's in like the round one fixtures. Atleti are in there. So yeah, they get a bit more of a break, I guess. But they play in ahead of Barcelona and Real Madrid anyway. So they have less time to be ready for that season opener, for facing Malaga. And yeah, as I say, like the reason I'm excited, I guess, about that one is to get a first proper look at like what we're getting from them, because I don't think preseason has given us that much of an indication what we're getting.
Yeah, like either way, it's a massive, massive season for Real Sociedad. It's a massive season for Diego Simeone. And I'm intrigued. Look, I think that Kangin Lee is a really good signing. I think he'll be excellent within this team. I'm really excited for him to get a run of games. You know, you kind of hope that Simeone takes to him, but I think he will, considering what he brings both on and off ball. The signings, I think, have improved Atletico Madrid. Has it improved them enough? And like you were saying about Real Madrid to Barcelona, has it improved them enough to whip them into that conversation? I'm not 100% sure. And look, obviously quite a lot of this now rests on the future of Julian Alvarez, who had a bit of a funny season last year. He was unbelievable in streaks and then went through like big periods of drought as well. And he needs to be more consistent if Atleti are going to challenge at the top of the table, if they are going to be in that conversation. The conversations that I'm reading and listening to around Spanish previews are, can someone overhaul them again into third? Could Villarreal do the same thing again? Could Betis be in that conversation? And I think that's a worrying sign for Atleti, that they feel more like they're being dragged into the chasing pack than perhaps you'd be on the coattails of the big two. And that, I think, is something that has to change. Otherwise, there will be a change in management, I'd imagine, at the end of this season.
Yeah, I think so. I think exactly that, man.
Okay, well, we'll talk about some of that chasing pack in part two, where I'm going to be joined by the brilliant Rory Barlow, Spanish football journalist. Make sure you stick around with us here on Ranks FC. Welcome back to Ranks FC and our La Liga big preview ahead of the season beginning this weekend. I'm delighted to say now I'm joined by the brilliant Rory Barlow, expert on all things Spanish football and a good friend as well. Rory, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show. How are you doing, my man?
Yeah, I'm excellent. It's you're always far too kind to me, Jack, but it is a delight to be back on Ranks. And yeah, to preview this La Liga season, which is, they're always entertaining, they're always dramatic. And yeah, it feels like it's underway a little bit too soon this year after the World Cup, I will admit. But apart from that, we're very good.
I was going to say, Dean and I were discussing this as well. It's like we've just sort of taken a breath from the World Cup final and suddenly we're back in there. And, you know, it's going to affect certain teams more than others. Obviously, certain sides have more players who are playing in not just the World Cup, but the World Cup final, as opposed to others, notably Barcelona with this Spain side. But I do think it is one of those where so you take a breath, you turn around and you're underway again. And sometimes it leads to a chaotic beginning of the season. And in a league that hasn't done all that much transfer business, I would say, outside of the kind of natural three big guns at the top, it means that we've got this sort of strange situation where you're not quite sure what anyone's going to look like at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit unnerving how little business there has been kind of across the league for the most part. And yeah, you start getting asked your kind of predictions for the season, who's going to win the title, who's going to go down. And it's very hard to say. I mean, I remember kind of predicting Oviedo would stay up last season. And it kind of looked like they'd done some good business. They brought in kind of Rondon and a few others compared to the other promoted sides. And then those promoted sides went and signed kind of two or three strikers and looked really quite dangerous. So yeah, you get kind of a slightly kind of skewed view at this stage of the summer. It is only kind of 3 weeks or so left in the transfer window, but it does seem like that's when most of La Liga's business will be done. And I think, yeah, the delay from the World Cup, the fact that a lot of these sites, a lot of these teams will be waiting to see if they can make a big sale before they start doing business of their own. That has really kind of pushed things back. And I think, a few teams will be kind of looking a little bit erratic at the start of the season. But increasingly, that's the norm.
I mean, look, we do the headlines in part one. We've done Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atleti. And obviously, that's where a lot of the interest comes around La Liga. But I love this league and I love the stories that come beneath it. So I thought it was a good chance for us to explore. And look, I think we'll start with the teams playing in Europe as well. We'll start with Villarreal, who have made one major change in terms of the managerial department. They brought in Iñigo Pérez from Rayo Vallecano to replace Marcelino, who had done a wonderful job from a domestic perspective, I think, with this Villarreal side, but also last year in the Champions League. I think it's pretty fair to say that Villarreal were abysmal across the board. There hasn't been loads of business. Pedro Galassi has come in as a goalkeeping option, and Pedraza, whose role had become more limited in years gone by, has headed off to Lazio. But it does feel like a pretty similar team that Iñigo Pérez is coming in to work with. What are you expecting from Villarreal this season?
Yeah, it's going to be quite a shock, I think, for Villarreal, because they're going in from kind of the cold disciplinarian that is Marcelino, somebody that measures your weight as you come into training every day, somebody that's very, very strict. And to all intents and purposes, it's definitely one of a factors in his kind of management, that after 2-3 years, things get a little bit tired and players get a little bit sick of his discipline, to the kind of warm, welcoming embrace of Iñigo Pérez, who loves his players, who's a player's player. He's only kind of 30, 37, 38 years old. He's quite close to them in age, and is very much kind of, I'm going to look out for you guys as people, and then you're going to play for me as good footballers. So that's going to be quite a shock for Villarreal. I think it'll be interesting to see how that changes. I think as well, Marcelino, always quite a direct manager. I mean, it's high intensity, it's pressing, but then they're going to kind of move the ball as quickly as possible. Iñigo Pérez is kind of high tempo. He's very much from the Iraola school, as people will know from the Premier League, but a little bit more nuanced. He doesn't mind slowing the game down a little bit to then quicken the pace. And I think he's less kind of focused on being as direct. So I think you're going to see a Villarreal side that's a little bit more considered in its play. I think that might help in Europe. It's one that probably needs a centre-back or two in my view, but I think it will be exciting. And I think there will be a lot more emphasis on kind of youth players coming through as well. I think that's something we'll see this season.
There's a couple of returnees which are quite interesting. Like there are no signings per se, by Galassi, as we say, but there's a couple of players coming back into the fold here. Carlos Romero has had two excellent years at Espanyol. And then the two lads, Ilias Akamash is coming back from Rayo, so he's someone that Perez will know well. Thiago Fernandez coming back from Oviedo, where it was up and down in some ways. But these are players potentially that will have impacts. We also know that, you know, Alex Freeman came in halfway through last season. I'd expect him to be able to put his foot down and potentially push for a starting spot here. Logan Costa was absent with injury for much of last season. It feels like whilst there's not necessarily new faces in the camp, there are players who might be able to have more of an impact than they did last time out.
Yeah, there were things that went wrong for Villarreal definitely last season. And I feel like part of Villarreal kind of taking a step and parting ways with Marcelino is a feeling that maybe Iñigo Pérez can get a little bit more out of them. Carlos Romero, I think, as you say, identify him as someone that's really got room to improve, somebody that's kind of dominated the left flank at Espanyol over the last 2 years. And I think he'll be very exciting to watch. One of the names that I'm kind of keeping quite a close eye on is Carlos Macía, who is a youth player. He's coming into the side, central midfielder, very talented on the ball, but also got the size to go with it. I mean, normally you kind of get players or people around the clubs will be a bit more reluctant to kind of heap praise on young players. They'll kind of try and calm things down a little bit. But Rog, the president, has said that he'll be a Spain national team player. There was a headline in AS saying he's the Rodri of the Iñigo Pérez era. And he's been coached by David Albelda, who also keeps singing his praises in the B team. So yeah, Macía, I think, is one exciting name to kind of watch out for. But it will be very interesting to see what Iñigo Pérez can do with these players. And probably you're going to see kind of a different side of a Villarreal, because compared to Rayo, who had kind of an older squad, Perez was working with kind of players that had come up through the kind of lower divisions, players that had been in the mud, as they say in Spain. And now you're getting a Villarreal side, which is very different. It's a younger team, players who want to get to the top or players who have been at the top. So that will be interesting to see how Perez kind of manages those personalities.
Does the style translate? You know, we know exactly what Rayo are about, and Rayo have had that for some time, and it's very much in your face, front-footed. It's a style that's gone with Areola, you know, to Bournemouth and now to Liverpool, and we're intrigued by that in its own right. But Iñigo Pérez came in there and very much was like, right, we're going back to that kind of approach of playing football. It's taking that now into a club which isn't, you know, famed in the same way for effectively their blue-collar work ethic, for being able to kind of sweat through the shirt in the phrases that so many football clubs use. Will that translate to this group of players, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the big question mark, because as well with Rayo, you've got that kind of crowd factor. You've got the fact that the kind of the players kind of really feel the warmth from Vallecas and from the kind of tightness of the pitch. There's no real kind of escaping that atmosphere and that kind of push that you get from such a tight home ground. Compare that to Villarreal, where it's a modern stadium. It's not always going to be full. Sometimes the crowd need a little bit of convincing to kind of get on board with them. So how Perez kind of translates that to these Villarreal players and how he kind of compensates for that factor. Of course, he's going to be working with much more quality in this side, but he's going to have to kind of maybe switch his message up a little bit, kind of change things. I think what we've seen from Perez so far leads us to believe that he has the managerial abilities to translate both his style and both the kind of personality of his management. But it is still a question mark, because he's very young in his career, but he can point to one European campaign and one European final, which is not too bad.
No, if they go anywhere like Rayo did last year in Europe, I think there'll be a lot of very happy Villarreal fans, especially now they've got the taste for it after winning that Europa League a couple of years ago. Let's shift over to someone with less European success in Real Betis, although they have come close a couple of times recently. Obviously, somewhere close to my heart. Again, not too many changes. Pau Lopez left. Sergi Altamira was sold to Sporting. In response, they brought in Diego Conte from Villarreal, though, to be fair, he's barely played in terms of that setup. Fran Garcia comes in at left back from Real Madrid, and they bring in Facundo Bernal, who's a bit sort of the odd one out in some regards. He's the kind of wild card element that they bring in central midfield. Preseason, it's looked pretty good. They often look pretty good in preseason. Pellegrini has a way of working with this group of players that means that it's usually entertaining, even if they're not winning. But I've been impressed with them thus far, and I'm quietly optimistic about this Betis campaign, I think.
It's the hope that kills you, Jack. But yes, no. Manuel Pellegrini, of course, he's a very familiar face. He's a wily old fox. I guess the question with Betis is, can they kind of refresh themselves sufficiently for me? Because I almost feel like they accidentally got a Champions League spot. They obviously finished fifth. I think they were kind of...
This is so true.
And they were kind of taking credit for previous season's work, where they might have qualified for the Champions League, because I think
yeah, they'd done kind of campaigns that were kind of worthy of finishing in that top four and been pips by kind of a very good Athletic side 1 year, very good Villarreal side another. And so this season it was kind of like, okay, they've had kind of an up and down season. They've had kind of some key players missing. Isco was out for much of the season. Lo Celso didn't really pay off. Antony was kind of in and out with injury, kind of suffering a little bit. And you had some other players kind of like the Abdes of this world step up. So can you kind of refresh that for Betis and get back to your kind of best form? Is my big question. They also was another one that didn't pay off in midfield. I think they missed Johnny Cardoso. And we'll maybe come on to their kind of big signing, I guess, so far of the window. But yeah, can they kind of refresh things? Can they get more out of Pablo Garcia, who was kind of the exciting wonder kid coming through, but never really kind of caught fire last season? I think this Betis side have all of the quality and ingredients they need to have a really good season. But there were times when it felt like they were running on empty under Pellegrini. And as kind of as late as kind of February, March, there were some people wondering if Pellegrini's time, his cycle was coming to an end. And now we're in this spot where they probably had, in theory, their most successful season under him, perhaps bar the Copa season, and whether they can kind of come back into it.
I think this is it. Like, there's exciting players here, but ones who have not really necessarily fulfilled their potential. Rodrigo Riquelme is 26 now. Right? Like, he's no longer the young kid that was coming through at Atleti and we were all very, very excited about. It's time that Rodrigo Riquelme is like, right, I'm starting games. I'm the guy on this left-hand side of the attack. And, you know, I want to nail my colours to the mast in that regard. Abde was very good last season. There was talk of bids coming in from the Premier League. That didn't come to pass. And I think he'll have an opportunity to showcase himself again. So there's clearly talent here. And if they can keep Gio Lo Celso and Isco fit in terms of that number 10, all right, sure. There's definitely space to kind of build through. I think you're right on Pablo Garcia. I think Angel Ortiz as well, someone that you're kind of expecting to make a go of it at that right back spot and challenge Héctor Bellerín for the kind of right to start in that spot now. But they do feel a little bit like they're caught between the rock and the hard place in that there's been some really good servants in this team, Marc Bartra, Bellerín, who have been there for quite some time now. You'd expect them to be being challenged by this point for a team that are playing in the Champions League this season. And it doesn't feel like a lot of those players who were brought in to kind of push the boat onwards have necessarily achieved what they were going to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. You're looking at the likes of kind of Valentin Gomez. You're looking at kind of some of the players that have even gone out. I mean, Chimi Avila, Paulo Lopez, Bakambu, Amrabat. These are players that were in theory meant to kind of really, if not kind of take a starting spot, then at least kind of provide good rotational options. And I don't think Pellegrini ever really trusted a lot of his kind of second 11 in inverted commas. So I think what he will be asking the Betis board for is a much more rounded squad, hoping that, as you say, kind of Angel Ortiz can challenge Bellerín. Left back, they brought in Fran Garcia, but that's been a problem position for many years. And I guess for me, at this early stage as well, maybe the transfer business changes, but Facundo Bernal, who they brought in from Fluminense, that's the one where you look at it and say, well, if he can be your kind of Johnny Cardoso replacement, then he kind of changes the outlook of that midfield. They can do different things. They can maybe press higher. They can maybe be a bit more kind of head-to-head, because Amrabat had kind of maybe one or two good months, but for the most part was kind of missing. And you really felt that lack of physicality in midfield last season. And it really meant that Fornals had to step up, and he did a brilliant job. But at times it felt like he was alone there.
The other thing, I suppose, is goalkeeper, right? And Konda comes in here in a bit of a strange spot. Like, he's on loan, and this has felt like it's going to happen for ages. It felt like when he moved from Leganés to Villarreal, he was going to be the guy. He never really kind of nailed down that starting spot. When Valles came back in last year, it felt like he was going to be the replacement for Jorge Silva, and, you know, it didn't really necessarily work out for him either. This should be potentially a more even, a battle that at the very least gives them options to, if one of them isn't performing, those are two goalkeepers who should be able to push each other onwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, to be honest, a point of contention between myself and Pellegrini. And I don't think I'd ever dare to say this to his face, but definitely his kind of management of goalkeepers, his handling of kind of the number one spot is something that's always confused me. I mean, Valles, he did make a few errors, but he was kind of coming in and out of the side at times. I mean, you had Adrián starting games, Paulo Lopez, who went out, also kind of came in for a few games here and there. And it feels like Pellegrini has never quite fully trusted Valles. Whether he does Conde or whether he kind of sticks to Valles this season is a is a point of contention. I don't know. I mean, you're obviously, you keep an eye on Betis. So I don't know if you have a firm view on this, but it's something that has irritated me about Pellegrini for a couple of seasons when generally it's hard to critique his management too much.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, I think the whole Roy Silva thing felt, it took way too long for him to come into the team. When he came in, you were like, why has he not just been installed as the number one? This was a clear option to go with. He does seem to, you know, it's one of those kind of points you can prick him with, but, you know, ultimately it's been successful. So it's hard to contend with Pellegrini, but I do agree. And I think it's going to be interesting who he starts the season with. And then who's in goal in 3 months' time might be worth just keeping an eye on from a Betis perspective. Let's go over to Real Sociedad because it's been a very, very quiet summer. Bryce Mendes, who was kind of frozen out under Matarazzo, leaves and goes to Columbus Crew, where I think he's going to be an absolute joy, by the way. And I'm really excited to see him in MLS. Carlos Fernandez, who's effectively third choice striker by that point, goes out as well. There are no incomings. They've signed a defender who was with them on loan last year in the B team on a permanent contract, but there are no significant ones. It leads me to kind of two strains of thought. One is that the Real Sociedad have any money to spend. And the second is, are they just so confident in another batch coming through this incredible academy that they're like, let's just play with it?
Yeah, partly. I wonder if it is. I think it was kind of a strange season for La Real as well, because they captured lightning in a bottle to a certain extent. They had kind of 3 months under Matarazzo, which was phenomenal, where they went from kind of relegation candidates to European challengers. They win the Copa del Rey. And then after the Copa del Rey, understandably, everyone is a bit hungover and things kind of tail off a little bit. And it felt like a bit of a slightly disappointing or slumped end to the season, even if it was highly successful. And so now I think if you're Real Sociedad, you're looking at this and saying, well, can Matarazzo get the best out of these players? That if you kind of run through their squad, there's a lot of players that were brought in for decent money that are young players that haven't quite got the full potential out of them. I mean, Oscarsson, the forward, the number nine, the alternative to Oyarzabal, is one of those. Take Kubo, even, who had two good seasons and has had two kind of meh seasons since. It's very frustrating to not see him at his best, but if you can get more out of him, then that would be a huge jump forward as well. Lucas Sucic is one who you see flashes of, you see games where he's brilliant and then others where he kind of fades out the side. So I wonder if they're kind of challenging Matarazzo almost, although I'm sure it's not a challenge that he's particularly enamored with, but challenging him to say, look, we've got a squad that's kind of full of quality. Maybe we need one or two before the end of the window, but there's enough here for you to kind of challenge for a European spot. And especially, and here's the key point, they do have some European football, but I don't think it's going to be a big focus for them.
Okay, well, that's interesting, right? Because it does feel like they should be a contender in that Europa League campaign after winning the Copa del Rey. If the squad's not big enough, that's one thing. And whether it's going to be kind of thrown in some regards it is an interesting question. But I think you're right in terms of the young players. And it does feel like finally we've got to see some of these young midfielders, which obviously is a speciality in some regards of this La Real Academy when you think of the midfielders that have come through. But it's nice to see Beñat Torrientes getting games. It's nice to see John Gorostegui kind of becoming the main man in that midfield as well. I'm glad to see those academy products being given the opportunity to showcase their worth. But my question was going to be, is this a big enough squad to deal with, you know, a campaign on multiple fronts in terms of Europe and La Liga and potentially a defense of this Copa del Rey? It looks like the answer to that question currently is no, but then equally, it wouldn't surprise me if in 3 months' time, there's two new academy starlets who are kind of undroppable.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And I think if you're at Real Sociedad as well, you're looking to the likes of a kind of Zakarian, who's been kind of playing kind of 20, 25 games here and there and not really kind of taking that step forward. Torrientes and Gorostegui, again, there are two reasons why I think La Real are a candidate to take a jump forward this season, because Gorostegui had a good year last year, but after his first full season in La Liga, I expect him to take another step forward. Torrientes, after kind of 18 months of kind of wandering through kind of the marshes and not really quite finding a good direction or a kind of run of form, he really kind of kicked on again under Matarazzo last season. So I think between that midfield and ultimately, if you look at La Liga generally, it's the midfields that kind of define your success. And then if you can find the goals, if you can find that solidity, that's the bonus. But I think that midfield that they put together with Soler in there as well, and let's not forget Oyarzabal ahead of them, that's going to be the key for La Real. And I think I kind of look at it compared to the likes of your Betis, your Villarreal, your Athletic, and maybe they're not in that kind of top four conversation, but I just like their pieces a little bit better than the rest of them in that kind of top eight conversation.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. There's always this really interesting scrap for like fourth and fifth in La Liga. And I think that usually, I mean, Villarreal were a little bit of an outlier last year and it never felt they were going to let go of that third spot. But normally that battle for the two final Champions League places or whether that's one Champions League place this year, we're kind of yet to find out. But it kind of doesn't really matter in some regards because it means that scrap for those final places does come down to often these teams or potentially one outsider coming from nowhere. And it's always good to keep an eye on that. But it feels like a well-matched bunch again, I think, in the middle of that pack. In terms of their friends over in the Europa League, it's Celta Vigo who are making a return to Europe. They've had a relatively interesting window. Obviously, Oscar Mingueza went over to Crystal Palace. Still one of the most interesting players I've ever seen because it rarely gets a pass wrong, but I'm still unconvinced by his ability either moving with the ball or defending, which makes him this kind of weird little unicorn footballer in so many strange ways. But they also lost Sotelo, who's a youngster who maybe wasn't given quite enough opportunity to showcase what he was capable of. In comes Bayandir as a goalkeeping option. Abdoulaye Faye comes in on loan, who you imagine is going to challenge for that right-back spot that Mingueza leaves vacant, and Javi Galán returns to the place where he succeeded after effectively just not doing anything in any of his spells elsewhere. But I'm glad to see him back at Balaidos. But it does feel like when we're kind of looking at this Celta side, they're in a good spot. They've kind of built on the original positive trajectory and positive momentum. I'm unsure as to how that translates into the Europa League. I felt like the Conference League was a good opportunity for them. But, you know, we're at a space now where Celta feel like they're back amongst this conversation in terms of that chasing pack. And that's a good place for them to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're slightly taking a leap of faith because, again, on paper, I kind of agree with you. There's not been many reinforcements. I look at it and I'm a bit concerned that their squad's a little bit short, especially Borja Iglesias up top, number 9. He's 33 now. He's not had a summer off as he usually does, obviously, at the World Cup and then moonlighting as a DJ in Ibiza for the last kind of 2-3 weeks, which has been greatly
huge
entertaining.
Respect, yeah. the panda does what he wants.
The panda does do what he wants, but I wonder what kind of ojeras they call it in Spain, which is kind of when you've got kind of bags under your eyes, and the panda might have some large bags under his eyes this season. But yes, anyway, the squad there at Celta does look a little bit short. They brought in Alex Febas, as you kind of mentioned, and Febas is a really talented player. He's very kind of good to watch midfielder. There was points last season where he's a former Real Madrid Academy talent. And there were some Real Madrid fans I know kind of asking, well, maybe we could do with a Febas-like figure, somebody that can pick a pass, that control the tempo. So I think Celta, we're taking a leap of faith based on the trust that Claudio Giraldez, the manager, over the last 2.5 seasons has earned because he's done so well with the Celta squad and he's integrated so many youth players. And Marco Garcés as well, the sporting director, who's also done a fine job over the last 2 years of finding solutions. They probably want 2, 3, 4 more in before the end of the window for me to make a successful run of it. But yeah, Celta, you just trust them implicitly because of the way they've been going.
Is this the year that Ferran Yuklar steps up? It feels like he's been on the verge for a little while. I really, really liked him when he was at Club Brugge. I thought that he showcased all of that ability to be a Champions League forward. I remember doing a prediction show about 2 years ago. We did like a New Year's one. It might have been going into 2025 or even 2024, where I was like, he'll get a £20 million move to a Champions League club. And he got the move to Celta, which was just shy of kind of the expectations. And it very much wasn't for £20 million. But you're kind of discussing it in the light of, I thought he was ready to make that step up in the kind of, almost in the sense of someone like Evangelos Pavlidis at Benfica, where he was ready to be the main man. And he came into this Celta side and I thought, yeah, okay, Borja's there, but you know, he's going to rotate in and out. And Yuklar just hasn't quite settled in the way that I thought he might.
Yeah, for somebody that moves so quickly and so well, he's quite a meaty forward. And so you kind of think that inherently he has that physique to be successful, to kind of hold off defenders. But there's something about him that maybe Giraldez hasn't quite trusted a fully 100%. I mean, he's rarely kind of the number nine. If he is, it's kind of coming on for Borja Iglesias. Often he'll be kind of playing one of those number 10 roles, just off the number nine and kind of coming into the forward line from that kind of slightly further back position, which I'm not
quite sure whether that benefits him or not, but it's certainly a question mark. The player that kind of really excites me, the player that I really, really desperately hope they hold on to because he's so lovely to watch, is Willett Swedberg, who had kind of a something of a breakout season last year. He has that kind of iconic goal where he kind of sits Courtois down at the Bernabeu and then walks the ball in. It's just glorious, and that is kind of Swedberg at his best. He's just such a smooth player. It feels like he has time in the box that nobody else does. And if you get the chance, yeah, tune in to watch Swedberg because he seems to be adding both goals and assists to his kind of game, to the kind of smoothness of gait that he has, to the ability to kind of wriggle away from challenges. And if he can make that a permanent fixture, then he is very exciting to watch.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was a little bit surprised that he didn't get into the World Cup squad for Sweden, if I was honest, off the back of the season that he had. So perhaps this is the time for him to kind of shore that up after a good season last year. Maybe this is his proper breakout moment. All right, last team who are in Europe is our old friend Getafe, who have probably had the busiest summer of any of these teams that we've discussed. Zaid Romero, the very, very tall centre-back coming in. They've loaned Oren Mangala from Lille. Leon Sazonov, another centre-back who's come in from Torino, who's out of contract. Andres Garcia has returned on loan to La Liga after a deeply unsuccessful spell, I think we should add, at Aston Villa, although he was unlucky. Just every time it felt like he was going to get onto the pitch, he managed to get injured, which is a little bit of a shame. They brought in Valu and Soroche, who'd been playing in the Betis Deportivo team, and they've just taken a gamble on as a free agent. So a lot of business there. They've lost a couple of key players as well. Luis Milla, who was brilliant last campaign, and Adam Batty, who's been a really brilliant servant for the club as well. Caceres and Iglesias have left also, but they feel like they've had the most churn. I'm intrigued by what they look like.
Yeah, I think the credit has to go to Getafe for keeping hold of some of the offers of their success last season. I mean, relegation candidates in January, it's Martin Satriano, Romero, and Mario Martin and Boselli. Those are the four that they've kind of kept from last year that were kind of on loan. And they were huge players for them, particularly Satriano and Romero. Romero at the back is an absolute tank of a player. He just seems to kind of bust his way through anyone that kind of gets in his way. But as you say, there is that kind of question mark. I mean, Getafe are universally known as the hatchet men of La Liga. But if you look at Adam Batty, he's probably the most wily of those kind of players that have been around for a long time. One of the ones that knows where to be at the right time. One of the ones that enforces that borderless style. And when they needed it, when they needed that kind of little spark of creativity just to give them enough goals, it was Luis Milla who waved his magic wand. He was only behind Guler and Lamine Yamal for assists last season in La Liga. A lot of it from set pieces, of course, but he just has that kind of understanding of where the ball needs to go at the right time. And so far, I don't really see a replacement for them in their squad. So, yeah, how does he replace Mia is the big question for me for Bordalas, but it's going to be interesting to see them return to Europe and Europe be horrified by Getafe as well as Spain.
We're all going to be terrified, but it is going to be a lot of fun. Tenaz has come in, obviously. He was on loan at Espanyol from Villarreal last year, and now he comes into this side. He kind of feels like he should be here. He's been at Getafe before and it was like, oh, okay. And then he went off to Espanyol and now he's returned. It just feels like one of those kind of odd things that I don't understand why he wasn't there for the full time. And it's not going to replace Mia's magic in terms of the middle, but it does give them at least another option in central midfield.
Yeah, Terats, I think there was a few kind of welcome back posts from Getafe players and what took you so long? I think he was kind of meant or wanted to go to Getafe last season, but some reason they, probably the salary limit, couldn't get the deal worked out. But Terats, I have a little bit of a tenderness for Terats. I find him a really exciting, interesting player to watch. I think he's technically very gifted. I think he kind of understands how to time his runs into the box. He's got kind of that softness of touch as well. I don't quite understand why he's not translated that into kind of goals or to more consistent play, but too many managers have seen fit to drop him over the last kind of 2-3 years and his career has stagnated as a result. Bordalas seems to really like him. Can he now have that consistency over a full season and get himself back into kind of La Liga's kind of bright spotlight? Because when he burst onto the scene for Villarreal, he was really, really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose he is an Espanyol fan, so we can't really begrudge him going for a year to play. He'll be almost devastated that they didn't pick up the option, but I think it's good for Getafe and probably good for him in terms of the minutes as well. Right, we'll take a little break then. We come back on the other side. I want to talk about a couple of new managers and the returning clubs from the Segunda. There are some very exciting storylines at the bottom of the league as well. Stick with us here on Ranks FC. Welcome back to Ranks FC in part three of our big La Liga preview. It's me, Jack Collins, and I'm joined by the ever brilliant Rory Barlow. We're going to talk about some of the new managers, new faces at the helm. We've discussed Iñigo Pérez at Villarreal, but there's a big one at Athletic as well. Ernesto Valverde hanging up the managerial whistle after a couple of unbelievable years, replaced by Edin Terzic, which I don't think anybody saw coming, if I'm honest. I mean, what do you make of it, Rory?
There's a slightly comical kind of contradictory narrative of Germany having a big freak out about where its football is at after the World Cup, Spain being kind of the envy of the world after winning the World Cup, and La Liga appointing loads of German managers because they keep seeming to do really well in Spain. So Terzic is the latest of that. And a slightly comical kind of narrative at Athletic as well, because normally you say you want somebody that knows the league, you want somebody that's kind of familiar with the players and has kind of experience there. But it's the narrative that Terzic doesn't know the players, that everybody has a clean slate, that he's not kind of familiar in the way that Valverde was. And it felt, again, kind of, we talked about Pellegrini maybe before, but Valverde certainly, it felt even more tired. And I think he realized it was time for him to go. It was time for the players to get a fresh voice. So Terzic is that. I'd say working in his favor is the fact that almost everything went wrong last season, but they were still kind of competitive. Sanset, Iñaki Williams, Vivian, kind of three of the faces of their success under Valverde. They've got to return to something like their average form. Nico Williams, of course, injured pretty much all season. If he can get back his fitness, then that will help. And so I think the ingredients are there for Terzic to kind of return Athletic to the kind of European kind of competition and slightly get them back up the table. But whether they kind of find that kind of lightning in a bottle that they had under Valverde, that's a bigger question for me.
There's always the question with Athletic about, you know, who's coming in, who's going out. It feels like there's a lot of kind of fringe players and youngsters who've been let out on loan or gone on free transfers. There's been no significant incomings in that regard. But there's enough within this squad, I think, to work with, especially without European football, Rory, that they should be able to pull something together with what's already on the table here.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it you mentioned there, because Athletic, they looked dead on their feet after three kind of very intense seasons under Valverde, and the style of play that they have is so physical, it's so demanding, that you really need to be kind of on it and they need to be able to press properly. I think that you have a few younger players there coming through. I mean, Rego will be in his second season and he's kind of quite an exciting midfielder, big physical, but has the technical ability. He'll maybe kind of take on more of a role instead of maybe Ruiz de Galarreta, who for a long time was kind of the orchestrator in midfield for me. Peo Canales, one returning from Racing Santander. So there's a few. Celton, of course, as well. He kind of came into the side at various points. He looks like he could maybe provide that little bit of creativity or magic. But there's always that kind of worry with Athletic that they're so desperate for new players to come through at times that maybe they introduce them a little bit too soon and they don't quite have the expectations. The one, I guess, to keep an eye on for me, the one that people wondered why he wasn't getting so many minutes, and of course with Nico Williams kind of playing in his favourite position, that's difficult. But the one that I really like is Robert Navarro, who showed kind of glimpses of his technical ability. He's a really technically gifted number 10, kind of plays out wide often, but an exciting player.
Yeah, I mean, also a provider of goals in a team that was really, really shy of them last season. I love Celton purely because he's come in there and obviously we know the rules around Athletic and, you know, the kind of Basque heritage, etc. Then someone was like, by the way, that's Bobby Firmino's cousin. You know what? Sorry, come again. Turns out his mother is Brazilian and his sister's with Bobby Firmino's parents. So it's like, oh, okay, cool. Just got Bobby Firmino's cousin running around in midfield for Athletic Club. It's just an excellent story across all of it. I mean, it did look like they were going to lose a couple of players. There was discussion around Aymeric Laporte at Barcelona and, you know, Athletic shut that down pretty quickly and were like, no, 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 no. You know, if you want him, you're going to have to pay the release clause, which as ever with Athletic is incredibly high. This is how they do business and it's part of the equation when it comes to Athletic. But I think hanging on to a couple of these players, and as you say, you know, if we get fully fit Ojan Sunset this year, if we get fully fit Nyaki and Nico Williams, things look very different for Terzic than what they did look like, you know, halfway through last season for Valverde.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Terzic will be slightly banking on that. I guess for in kind of the negatives column, the cons column, you look at it and say, well, coming from outside, will he be able to kind of assimilate into the Basque atmosphere, into the kind of very idiosyncratic nature of such a big club? Of course, Dortmund is probably quite a good testing ground to kind of come into Athletic Club. You've got kind of similarities there, but it is very much a kind of one city or one team city, which comes with its own kind of pressures and difficulties. And you just want a good start if you're Terzic and Athletic Club, because then you kind of get time to build, you get time with the fans on your side. And if you don't get that, then that's when things start to really go south. He won't have the credit that Valverde did.
Well, the good news, Radin Terzic, is that he is my footballing doppelganger, and I was welcomed in with open arms to the Athletic community. So I'm hopeful that he can get exactly the same as well. A couple of other new faces as well. Luis Miguel Ramis has gone in to Osasuna from Burgos, which feels very interesting. People might remember Burgos for being the team that just didn't lose, but just drew constantly over and over and over again a couple of seasons back. Beñat San Jose has replaced Inigo Perez at Rayo Vallecano, a really interesting man in that he spent most of his playing career playing futsal and beach football for Spain, etc., before going over and effectively building his managerial tenure in the Saudi leagues before they were flush with money. And then also Martin Anselmi, who struggled at Porto but is seen as a young managerial talent worth banking on, replaces Eder Sarabia at Elche, a man who played some excellent football but was extremely combustible is probably how I'd put it.
Combustible is a great description. I think Elche, I do have a stat that does not bode well for Anselmi, and that is that in the last 8 years, Elche have had 8 managers since 2018. Everyone who's not been Spanish, Becasese and Almiron, who's been there 2-3 times, has been sacked and has seen Elche ever relegated or relegated later that season. It's a bit of a concern. Can he inspire that same connection with his players as Sarabia did? Who combustible he may be, but he seemed to win over all of the Elche squad. And of course, they've lost Alvaro Rodriguez, who's gone to the Premier League for big money. They brought in Ferninho from the second division, Buonanotte on loan from Brighton. You're asking a lot of them to replace Febas and Alvaro Rodriguez, who were two of the main names. Kind of moving over to Osasuna and Ramis, I think he kind of suits them character-wise in the fact that he's quite modest, he's quite conservative, he's not going to kind of get above his station or demand kind of a specific style of football. My worry for them is that Budimir isn't getting any younger, and if he doesn't get the goals without Victor Munoz, they brought in Dubassin from the second division, maybe things start to go a little bit south, but they should have enough quality to stay up. And then there's the disaster that is Rayo. I don't know if you want to glaze over the Rayo disaster, but Beñat San Jose.
I think we should do it.
Yeah, he's coming into a side that could be playing at Burgos at various points this season. The Madrid Council have shut down Vallecas. They've said that it's not fit for people to enter into. You can apparently catch Legionnaires' disease at Vallecas this season if you were to enter. So
they might not be wrong, but it still feels bad.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the latest episode in the Real Martín Presa show. It's Inigo Perez did a remarkable job under these conditions, but to ask somebody to come into it new who doesn't necessarily have the players on board, I think you have a side that will maybe have a bit of a hangover from last season. A side that on the one hand does have experience of staying up in La Liga, does have a kind of good atmosphere around the squad, but you're just asking them to have that kind of same hunger as they did last season, and that's where maybe worry for San Jose that he has a difficult job coming into.
I mean, I think the only thing necessarily in his favour here, and obviously, you know, we hope that Vallecas is made habitable and they're brought back as soon as possible, is a very, very special ground, even if it isn't necessarily the most hygienic place that I've ever been in my entire life. But you kind of look at it and think, you know, they kind of bond under the spirit of everyone is against us. And it does very much feel like the world is against Rayo again, that there is such a community around the club. There is such a, there's such a special club in so many ways. I just reread Working Class Heroes on my holidays. It's just a wonderful, wonderful read about kind of falling in love with Rayo as a club. But if you kind of look at it, there is an element of kind of us against the world. No one likes us. We don't care about Rayo that might just seep into these players alongside a manager when they're being forced into situations even worse than what they usually have to deal with.
Yeah, and that's the hope if you're Beñat San Jose. I think you're trying to bottle up some of what was there last season to kind of win over the kind of leaders in that dressing room very early. Your Issy Palaçons, your Lejeunes, your players that have been there for a while that understand what this is about and basically understand how to play with kind of that leadership from the top not really adding up to what's happening on the pitch. There was a kind of line I wrote down earlier kind of when I was doing some preview stuff, and it kind of felt like a fairy tale even though they didn't win the Conference League last season. Oh, everything yeah. felt like it was perfect for Rayo. It was the Rayo season. And then you're right, or you come back into preseason training, you get shaken awake, you've got the hangover from hell, it's 36 degrees outside, and you've got a new boss coming in, and it's you just
and no
want
ground.
Those, yeah. You want those first few weeks again to kind of go well, because otherwise that's when things can kind of start spinning out of control. And let's not forget the last time that Rayo weren't under Iraola or Iñigo Perez, his subsequent assistant, Francisco lasted about 7 months and they were in the relegation zone. So yeah, San Jose, big shoes to fill. But he seems to be liked by his previous kind of fans, Ibar. They seem to have a lot of respect for him. So hopefully he can translate some of that onto the pitch.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, look, I don't trust the one-name managers. I remember Ruby being at Betis. So I'm going to lay that at Francisco's door as well. And hope that this one goes better, because he doesn't have just two names, but three in so many ways. Let's get on to the promoted sides, because there are just some wonderful stories here. I think if most neutrals could have picked two returning sides they'd like to see back in the division, Deportivo de La Coruña would have been very high up that list. Malaga would have been very high up that list. And I think, you know, when you speak to people in Spain, seeing Racing Santander, one of the kind of original founding members of La Liga back in there, they've been absent since 2012. The other two have kind of lived parallel lives since 2018, and they're both their relegations that season. They've both dropped down to the third tier, both fought their way back, and are kind of have their legendary stadiums in their own right, and kind of European heritage and victorious heritage in relatively recent history. These are three clubs, I think, you know, as a neutral, you look at and think, yeah, it's wonderful for them to be back in La Liga.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was at a La Liga event the other day, kind of welcoming back the promoted clubs to La Liga. And it was kind of interesting, because obviously the first question that Marco and ask them is, well, what's the signings looking like? What's the transfer market? And all three of them were like, well, we're going to make some signings, but we're not going to go mad. I think the Racing president in an interview recently said, if I could just keep my squad together and nobody left, I'd be perfectly happy. Malaga have said, well, we're not going to do too much business, because ultimately that's kind of what got us into the mire in the first place. So you have these three clubs coming back up. They're all so kind of conscious of their own mortality after going through difficult spells. And it's going to be really exciting. But Depor are the one that have spent 26 million is their biggest spend since 2002-2003, when they spent 42.66 million. And let me just run you through some of these brilliant transfers. Albert Luque, 15 million from Mallorca. Jorge Andrade, 13 million from Porto. Roberto Acuña from Zaragoza for 11 million. And Pablo Amo for 3-4 million from Zaragoza. Most recently, Spain's assistant manager until 2025. Yeah. And of course, Sebastián Abreu returning from loan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty special list, right? Like, and then you kind of bring it to where they are now, and you're thinking, right, how are you going to command with that? And they go, okay, cool. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, how are you doing, pal? And the procession, you know, whatever you want to call it, him arriving at Azor was just remarkable in so many different ways. But it feels like a really smart, you know, they have spent, you're absolutely right. And they're very much in objection to everyone else in that regard, but it doesn't feel like they've gone mad. Leodor Mann feels like a good addition in goal. Asp Jensen is someone who had a wicked season last year in Switzerland with Grasshopper and feels like a good addition around 5 million. And then you bring Aubameyang in. Angelino comes in on loan from Roma. These are not the names of so long ago, right? They are not quite the same kind of caliber of footballer, but Amatucci, the young Italian coming in from Fiorentina, Bright Ede coming in from Poland on a really, really exciting deal. Someone very, very bright, I think, in terms, no pun intended, of what his future looks like. It just looks like, as much as it is spend, it looks like sensible spend as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, overall, I quite like the business. They've not lost any key players. I think if you look at kind of last season, Real Oviedo, again, to draw a comparison of a team that spent some time down at the bottom, came back into La Liga, had a really big push from their stadium at the start for the first kind of 6 months of last season when they were kind of in it. Depor will have that, but with much more stability and with a better squad at their disposal. So I think Hidalgo can be quite excited with what his side can do. And I think, yeah, Depor will be kind of expecting to almost stay up if you kind of compare them to the likes of your Elches, your Levantes. They've got more budget. I don't think their squad is that much worse. And they will have, yeah, that Riathor factor. And Racing, I also have to say, I really, really like Racing. I mean, Jose Alberto Lopez is their coach. I think he's exciting. I think you'll see him in all the articles of up-and-coming managers in the next kind of year or two. Played open, good football, releasing players into space. They played Villarreal in the Copa last year, beat them. Played Barcelona, got narrowly beaten, but were competitive and still played some exciting stuff. And they brought back Sergio Canales, which is just a glorious transfer. I mean, Canales back at Racing, the club that he came through at. He will provide that leadership, that killer instinct, and something of star quality to a Racing side that, again, will have kind of a good full stadium backing them to the hilt.
I think this is it, right? Like when you're kind of looking at the different approaches, there is no guarantee. And I think the fact that, you know, all of these teams have done something slightly different feels like a good thing from where I'm standing. And look, I can't believe, having watched Depor like 18 months ago at Riazor, that we're still talking about the same team. That day they drew 1-1 with Eldenza. They were absolutely dreadful. They looked miles off it. And the only bright spark was Yaramay Hernandez, who looked absolutely brilliant. David Meyer had done okay, but it was very much Yaramay or bust. And to see them now in this position and some of the players that are coming in here to help them out, I love to see Yaramay now in La Liga, because it's felt for so long that he deserved this stage. I'm excited to see if Charlie Patino can kind of make his mark, someone that was hailed as one of the future, you know, stars of English football before he made his couple of moves and he ended up at Depor. And now he's part of a squad that will be very much looking to make their mark back upon this division after all these years away. I'm really intrigued by them. I think the Racing feel like the most collective of a unit. Like they feel like the team that are going to, you know, go about their business in exactly the same way that they did last season and believe that will take them up there. And look, there's track records of doing that and doing that well. I think that they feel probably the most stable of these sides, even with the kind of money being invested elsewhere. And I think that gives you this kind of interesting side. Fulham are playing Malaga today as we record this. So I'm kind of looking up to see what's going to happen. And I'm excited to see what Malaga can do in that game. But it does feel to me like they're three very different approaches. And I'm not quite sure which of them is going to work out. But I don't kind of write any of them off at this point.
No, not at all. And I think, as you say, kind of different approaches for each one of them. I think all of them are going to stay true to their idea and stay true to what's kind of got them there, which is interesting. Malaga, of course, I think probably the team that's kind of spent the least. I mean, they brought in Jose Salinas, left-back, and Calero from Espanyol, players that are experienced, have some sort of La Liga mileage, but it's not loads in terms of what they brought in. But what they do have is kind of a real kind of special feeling around the club. They kind of got here by accident as well. I mean, the manager Fuentes kind of came in and there was nobody really expecting them to make a promotion push, but that's been kind of based on academy players coming through. It's quite a young squad. They've been together a long time. They all kind of feel
Malaga quite strongly. La Rosaleda is in love with them, basically. And you've got some exciting players as well. La Rubia, the winger, is very exciting to watch. Dani Lorenzo has that kind of magic disguise of his kind of touch and his passing in the final third. And Chupe up front, who was one of the kind of top scorers in Segunda last season. So I think if they can just add that little bit of nous, that little bit of ruthlessness to guide them through a little bit, their unity will give them something special.
They feel a little bit like Celta a couple of years ago, right? With that crop that came through and everyone was like, oh, wow, this is just a young crop that loves the club and there's a manager who knows how to guide them. And suddenly you've got an incredible stadium behind you in that regard, Balaidos, but in this regard, La Rosaleda, as you say, I think that that could probably lift them to places that maybe others wouldn't expect them to, having seen the business.
No, and absolutely. I feel like all three of those clubs feel like they're at home now. There's no kind of maybe kind of thoughts of maybe these promoted clubs, they come up and some of the players haven't been on that stage before. They haven't necessarily played in La Liga or maybe it's kind of slightly too big a jump for them. I mean, I'm thinking of the likes of your Eibars and some of the recent clubs that have come up have obviously kind of got there and merited to, their place in the division, but it's still quite hard to adapt to La Liga. Whereas I think all of Malaga, Depor and Racing will feel like they belong. This is where the stage where they should be on. And most of the players in these teams will feel like they can compete at this level. So I don't think you'll get necessarily that concern at the start of the season from these players or that nervousness. And Malaga, Depor, Racing, three of the grounds definitely on my list to get to this season because I think they'll all be exciting.
First half of the season, mate, make sure take the Oviedo model, make sure you get there early before one of them runs out of steam, as I undoubtedly hope they don't, but I imagine that one of them at the very least will. Rory, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you as it always is. Thank you so much for joining us today on Ranks.
No problem at all, an absolute pleasure. And yes, good to be a part of the good work that you always do on Ranks, and I look forward to listening.
Yeah, make sure you go and give Rory a follow over on social media. I include it in the description. Lots of exciting content over the course of the Spanish season to come. But all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to all of you for listening. Thank you to Rory. Thank you to Dean for his contributions earlier in the episode as well. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much. And we'll see you all very shortly. Let's get stuck in to some La Liga. Peace.